Well, good morning, everybody. My name is Tobias Weber, and I'm a PhD student in Wolfgang Dohner's work group in Braunschweig. Before I start talking about a very, very small puzzle piece concerning Swagner Moss and Pete, perhaps a little words to the motivation. So what we've been seeing, or people have been seeing, is that there's a severe dissolved organic carbon increase in streams in the northern hemisphere. So here's a map of northern Europe and eastern Canada, and the different colors just say different concentration increases over the past 15 years, previous to the publication of the paper in 2007. And the size of these dots just demark whether there's a statistically significant increase or not. But there's a general trend that dissolved organic carbon is increasing in streams. And this has a lot of consequences we don't necessarily understand. But there's not only this effect, but there's a cause for this, obviously. And one of the causes could be downstream effects of decreased acid rain, for example, could be one. Basically, isolating individual factors is notoriously difficult. So we need to sort of go in and do some hypothesis testing. And for that, we need to investigate the water. So if we now go to one of the regions where we have the provenance of these dissolved organic carbons, peatlands typically, forests could be other ones, or are other ones definitely, but one of these are peatlands. We've got this general hydrological model of acrotelm or catatelm, and the acrotelm demarking the unsaturated zone, where the catatelm is the saturated zone. So here, if we now take the this is a picture of what it roughly looks like during autumn. So the colours are less bright. So you've got living sphagnum in the top, about 15 centimetres in our case, and then with depth you have increased decomposition of the dead organic matter. Because I was talking about dissolved organic carbon, maybe just a very simple sketch of what we would expect, or how we would expect the carbon to cycle in this profile. So we've got intake of CO2 fixation, we've got certain kind of processes of decomposition leading to an export of CO2 and methane, and also an export of dissolved organic carbon. And all this is often hypothesized to be governed by the water table and also the moisture state. So we have very high porosities, and this porous space is obviously variably saturated, and wherever there's air, you have connectivity so that CO2 can get into the profile, oxygen can get into the profile. And for prediction purposes, we need some kind of transport model here. And this is where my work comes into play, is sort of really at the very first step of the entire thing, and that is to say, okay, we're going to look at the water phase, and we need some sensible transport model describing the fate of water. So our objective is to simulate peat moisture dynamics with the Richards equation over a wide moisture range. So, a couple of words to our location. On the top left, we see the North Sea. On the right is the Baltic Sea, and Germany and Denmark in the center. Where you can see this little pin stuck in is the Harz Mountains. And the Harz Mountains, in the center of Germany, we have precipitation ranges of about 1,200 to 1,400 millimeters per annum in the area where we have our peatlands. And it's an ombrotrophic peatland, so that means rain-fed, very little nutrients. Yeah, it's mainly sphagnum dominated and has a bit of cotton grass not in bloom here, sadly. When working with organic soils, you have a couple of additional methodological challenges as compared to mineral soils. And I think it's worthwhile highlighting these. So you've got, most people know how peatlands are like, but they're very soft to walk on. So you need to think about how you're actually going to sample something which you could potentially just destroy reaching at arm's length. So we build wooden constructions and took big samples. We then froze and then we cut cores. That's about what they look like, 16 centimeters in length, 5 centimeters in diameter. Cut them into different, into small little slices, and then we mounted them on the high-probe system to conduct evaporation experiments. And on the outside, we have a very thin latex membrane to stop evaporation losses over the side. And we had to do this because in that time, in that year when I started to do the sampling, we didn't have enough frost in the ground to cut out big frozen blocks in the landscape. So on total we had 31 samples from zero depth to down to minus 40, so 8 every 5 centimeters, and at least 3 replicates per depth. So back to the method, we've got an evaporation experiment, so we've got our sample, it's open to the atmosphere at the top, we can measure the flux the flux of water as the difference in weight on a balance, and we also get tensiometer readings. Quite remarkable here is in this example, and this is just an arbitrary example out of one of the samples, are the very, very high cumulative evaporation rates. So we've got a 5 centimeter high sample, and here we're at the end of the experiment at 3 centimeters water loss. And could actually be more because porosity goes up to 98% in these samples. But we saturated them with zero pressure at the bottom, so there's still some air in the sample. To then talk about soil hydraulic property functions, to be able to model with the Richards equation, we need to do some good selection of models and also some parameter estimation to parameterize these models. So on the left, we see our measurements. We then take our initial and boundary conditions, or we replicate the experiment in hydrous, and then we take the initial and boundary conditions to run that experiment, and then we make some model assumption, some first assumption of parameters, and then we compute the experiment with the Richards equation, do some comparison, and see whether we've met our requirements. And the next part of the talk is basically on results of this. So initially, and there's been some discussion on Monday in one of the sessions, initially we started off with a standard van Knochen-Moellem model. So this is something which is quite popular in peatland hydrology. And we added the isothermal vapor conductivity. So we've got this experiment, we've got a nice stage one, stage two, the cumulative evaporation. These are the identified property functions, and this is our fit. So what we can clearly see is that in the more dry range, we don't match the experiment at all. And this is one example. I could have shown you 31, but I wouldn't have had enough time for that. It's uniform throughout the experiment. Now, you've got I've taken the log pressure head on the y-axis, and I'll be doing that in the next couple of slides as well, so that you can have a better idea of what's happening in the moist range. And we don't meet that either. So neither are we able to model the wet nor the dry range with this. So we got to take a different model. So what we took is the unimodal Peters-Dorner-Eden model. So basically what it does, it adds, on the retention side, it adds an adsorptive water component, and it forces the retention to go down to zero water content at a given metric potential. And then the conductivity side, it's composed of three parts, so the standard capillary bundle model, a film component, which is the one in blue, and then the isothermal vapor conductivity in green. Now, without showing you the results, this isn't enough either, so we go one step more flexible and make the entire thing bimodal. So we've got a bimodal Peters Donner Eden model to simulate our experiments. And then we see some interesting things. So we go down in depth, take an arbitrary sample out of that depth, 30 to 35 centimeters, and what we see here, we can actually then finally simulate our evaporation experiment with quite a good precision. And we also do that in the dry range. Now we go up one layer and see what happens there. So again, we've got our evaporation rate, stage one, stage two, cumulative evaporation, the soil hydraulic property functions, and then we see we're starting to get an increased mismatch. And also in the dry range, this is occurring. And if we go up a step further, right into the living sphagnum, which we're just treating as soil here, this mismatch increases. Yeah. Okay. Sorry. Right. So what we thought, okay, well, what is the question here? Is it just the problem of the soil hydraulic property functions not being able to model or fit into what we are wanting to do, or is it just generally not possible to simulate it? That kind of drying mechanism per se. So what we did was we took the top 5 centimeter sample and just separated the experiment into two parts and simulated them individually. So we just arbitrarily took them and separated the measured values at minus 100 hectopascal and did two simulations. And what we can see for the wet side is that we can actually, so in the top you've got the standard matching potential over time, and at the bottom you've got the logarithm to show the drying. And we can actually follow our measurements really quite nicely. And similarly, on the dry side, only in the extreme dry case you've got some small deviations. But that's actually quite reasonably good news. So to sum up, we've got this bimodal PDI, which is a highly flexible model, and in greater depth we can match our experiments with our simulations. But to be able to do that in the top range, we actually need a more flexible approach to do that. Maybe one little short last slide concerning the results. So if we now take all the samples and make averages of the experiment, of the solar hydraulic property functions per depth, and then plot them all together, there's some small things you can see. So in light green we've got the shallow depths, and in dark green we've got the greater depths with a gradual change. So in light green, in the top range, we see more pronounced bimodal pore size distribution, which decreases with depth, and also the air entry value changes. And while on the conductivity side, the conductivities drop very, very, very rapidly within the first few centimeters when drying. So to conclude, our simulations showed that the it was possible to do it with the Richards equation. We saw a considerable change of solutoid properties with depth. So in sort of 5 centimeter increments, the solutoid property functions change quite considerably. And we need highly flexible functions to be able to model that. I'm not quite sure how I'm in for time, but in case it's not enough here, I've got some posters and we can discuss more on this later. Thank you very much for your attention.
I will take one question for class, if there's a question. Nobu.
Do you measure the retention ratio? Especially the load drive, do you measure very accurately?
I suppose I can't really hear you.
Do you measure retention data for very dry drive?
No, we our experience are solely the the evaporation experience.
If you add the water retention, is that what you're saying?
If I go into the very extremely dry region, for example.
But I'm talking for dry region. You can include the water retention data.
I would think so. Yes.
Okay. All right. Thanks. Bye.
Thank you.